Just a heads up, everyone. This podcast features adults having adult conversations, and there might be the chance of adult language. Also, we may talk about some difficult grieving experiences and themes of mental distress that can trigger some people. If this conversation stirs up some hard emotions for you, please reach out to someone you trust. Hi, I'm Tatiana Rotere, and you are listening to Crazy Grief, the podcast. Grief can make us feel like we're going crazy. It affects our emotions, our physical health, and our mental state. It has a huge impact in the way we relate to people and the way we see ourselves. Crazy Grief is a safe space for us to have candid conversations about grief and all the crazy stuff that comes with it. We are here to share our stories, how we cope with grief, and what kind of help really helps. If you lost your person and you feel like you're going crazy, let me reassure you, you're not going crazy. You're just grieving. So let's talk about it. Today, I am very fortunate to have as a guest in my podcast, my beautiful friend, Cristiane. Cristiane she has been my friend for a really long time. She has been a really big part of my life. She is a wife and a mother to two beautiful kids. She's a trained counselor who works in a number of different modalities, including DBT, narrative, solution focus, and PCT. Her practice derives from a holistic approach, which means that she's all about empowering individuals to take the time in a safe and non-judgmental space to work out what's important to them and to try new ways of thinking, feeling, and being in the world. She was born in Brazil, just like me, and she moved to New Zealand at the age of 14. And everybody always asks if we are sisters, because we're both Brazilians, because we look alike. And the answer is no. And we did not meet each other in Brazil. We met each other here in New Zealand. We had to cross the oceans to come and meet each other here in New Zealand and then become the best of friends and be in each other's lives. And she adds a lot of really good things to my life. So, Cris.
Hi.
Welcome to Crazy Grief.
Oh, thank you so much, Tashi. And you know, it's a privilege to be here and just being with you in your home and just chatting and hanging out is always amazing. And yes, people do think we are sisters.
Yes, yep. They do. And so just a little disclaimer. Yes, we are at my home right now and my dog is around. So if you hear barking or if you hear some scratching or some whining, we are just going to keep him here with us. Because when we put him away, it's like somebody is being abused. He cries a lot and we don't want that.
No, not at all.
So I wanted to have you in the show because you are one of the people that knows me best and we have gone through a lot of things together, a lot of wonderful things and also a lot of hard things. Yeah. We know each other's secrets. So yes. You're going to have to be my friend forever because otherwise I'm in big trouble. But I think the main thing was because as a counselor, but also as my friend, you have also experienced a lot of grief. And when my husband died, when Jason died, Jason was also your friend.
Yeah.
And I wanted to find out from you, from the perspective of a friend who sees, you know, your best friend losing her husband, what was it like for you?
It was painful, incredibly painful. And I think the anxiety and the fear is probably the things that I remember the most. And just those early days, I just remember thinking, how can this possibly be happening to my friend? How can it be happening so close to me? And will this happen to me one day? And yeah, it was just purely fear. That's what I remember.
I think that a lot of people feel like, okay, so my friend is in pain right now and I wanted to help her.
Mm, yeah.
For you back then, how was it to see what was happening with me? And how did you feel in terms of, because people say, what can I do? Did you have that question?
Yes, I did. And to be honest, every day I didn't think I was doing enough or that I could help, really. Even though you are helping, you just don't feel like you are. Because it seems like unless I can bring my friend, her husband, back, it almost feels like that everything else that I was doing, it was just not even remotely close to what she needed. So it leaves you feeling quite unsure of everything. You know, you're doubting the whole thing, that is, that you're ever helping enough and that you can give something to the person in that moment, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I remember you being one of those people that, you know, I think I called you first.
Yeah.
And right after I called you, I called my sister. And so you came to my house straight away that night. And I remember you saying that the whole way that you were driving here, you were like, this can't be happening. This is not true.
Yeah, I've completely forgot that drive because I drove so fast and it was just one of those things that was so surreal. And I spent the whole time either thinking, this can't be right, he's definitely not dead, this is a mistake, or going, please God, like, do not let this be real. So that element of, you know, that conversation with God just started straight away. So naturally of like, don't do that. That would be a big mistake. Like, even for you, God, I know you think you know everything, but this one, you're going to get it wrong. Like it was such a surreal drive. And I still remember that moment vividly. That was one of the few things that has stayed with me.
Mm.
Yeah.
So you also had a very close relationship with Jason.
Yeah.
And can you walk us through a little bit of what happened, like, for that week? What was, you know, your last conversation with him and what was about to unfold between the two of you as counselors?
Yeah, also because Jay had done the degree in counseling that I was doing, he was ahead of me by a few years. And so then every time we caught up, he was always checking in on me, you know, and going, how's the placement going? How is the, you know, the learning, and have you got books, and always helping and chatting. And he was always like, you know, I have an older brother, and Jay felt like another older brother to me. But the relationship was even, it was different. It's different with Jay because of the counseling, because of the friendship that I have with you and with him. It was just, yeah, it really was a beautiful relationship. I really always felt like his little sister. And I never had to say this to you or to him, but it just was. Mm. And I know that my husband knew that as well, because that was one of the first things he said. He said, Jay's always been like an older brother to you. Mm. And it's just that heart and that checking in and how am I doing? And so we talked about normal stuff and the kids and families, but we always used to talk about the counseling as well. And I used to always listen to what he was doing at his work and the way he talked about his clients. And I just admired his love and his passion for the counseling profession, but for what it was doing in the lives of all those young men that he was counseling. And there was a part of me that was really looking forward to working with him. I mean, this is Jay. You know, he just, anyone that knew him was just like, knew he was so good at his job and he could just crack into things that everyone else just felt was too hard. So we talked a few times in the couple of weeks leading up to it about projects that we could do together and how we could get the boys more engaged. And so I was actually going to start a placement, a one-day-a-week placement at the school where he was working at. And I had already been in to visit. I had seen my office in his, and he had already showed me where I was going to sit, and he had already introduced me to all the staff and walked me through the school. And, And even the papers had been signed because on that Tuesday, he passed on the Tuesday night, he passed away. On that Tuesday morning, I had popped into the school to drop some stuff off to him. So it was really like, you know, very close.
Mm.
And that afternoon, that Tuesday afternoon, if I remember at 5:30 while I was getting ready to cook dinner for my family, I was exchanging texts with him, you know, and I said, oh, I popped in and you weren't there. And he's like, oh, yeah, I was just out with a colleague. Come back tomorrow. You know, we're talking about, I was going to start on Friday of that week. So, yeah, it's that, those losses, those little losses that just really stays with you. Mm. Mm, so, yeah, that was how I knew him. And just, I mean, how many, you know, Christmas meals together and holidays and,
yes,
and chats on the phone for 2 hours between you and I. And, yeah.
And being there when the kids were being born and all those things. So
just real, you know, family, friends.
So I'm really interested in just, I think, talking to you. I mean, we talked a lot about those things before. But there is, I think, a few dimensions from your perspective that I think might be really helpful for someone that is listening right now. And perhaps they don't know how to talk to, say, someone like me that lost their life partner.
Yeah.
And then they have friends around that want to help them, but they don't know how. You have been in that situation.
Yeah.
But also, I think with you is that whole thing of you holding your own grief because you had your unique relationship with Jason.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's like your friend died. He was going to be your colleague at work, a mentor in some ways. And we had this incredible family relationship that went back years that we spent Christmas together and we were at each other's houses and we had a really close relationship as families. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, that person that you're so close to dies. So you had to hold your grief.
Yes.
And then I was a mess.
Mm.
So you had, in some ways, to be there for me.
Yeah. And I held it. And I'm glad I did.
And that was least hard.
At least when I was with you. Mm. I would lose it and cry and have my moments at home with my husband. But not in front of you because it's your husband. Whatever pain I was feeling in that moment, I felt like it could not even be compared to yours. And it didn't feel like you had any, you didn't have the energy and strength to be holding me. It was me, and I wanted to do that for you. And so I grieved in my own space, in my own time, at home, with other people. And I have told so many people about Jay at my work. And that's part of how I've grieved as well, is just being able to talk about this wonderful man that they may never will meet, but that I can talk about him and, you know, honor and love. And yeah, and I've done that. That's been one way that I have grieved, but never in front of you.
And this is really interesting for me because back then, and there's the doggy barking right now. Sorry. So I wanted just to acknowledge that because I think that there were times when in those early stages of my grief, I was just so out of it that I really had no resources, to deal with much because the grief was so intense. And you were, one of the few people that held it together in front of me and then was able to go home to your husband and to other friends and have them support you through the grief that you were feeling about losing Jason, losing a friend.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you never dumped your grief on me.
No.
And so this is quite amazing to me because I think that a lot of people do not have that self-awareness that you had. Mm. And I don't think that people do that because they are bad people. I just think that they are not very self-aware.
Yeah.
And so there were lots of people coming to help me, but many of them were also grieving Jason, and they would start crying in front of me, or they would start just kind of almost like if I had to comfort them.
Yes.
When I had no resources to do that,
yeah.
When I had no capacity to do that. And the tricky thing, though, was that you in front of me were being super strong,
yeah.
Right? And then back home, God knows what was happening. Well, your husband, who's also called Jason,
yes.
By the way.
My Jason,
so
yeah.
Your Jason was really, you know, also grieving, and the two of you were supporting each other, grieving mm-hmm. together and finding other people to support you in that grief. And this reminds me of that model of the person that is in the center of this bullseye of grief.
Mm.
The person that is at the very center is the one that's grieving the most or most affected by the grief, by the loss of that person.
Yeah.
All the comfort from the people that are around in the outer circles need to go in. That person can dump their grief on everybody else, but the people around them cannot dump into that person.
Yes.
It can just dump on the outer circles.
Correct. Yep.
I don't know if the people that are listening can kind of see what I'm seeing,
yep.
But I can put a diagram on the notes.
Yeah.
What were the things that you felt, like you said, you talked to other people, you know, and then you went home and cried. But what were some of the things, like, what made you decide to do that?
Because I could see you, and you were so frail and exhausted, and you weren't sleeping well, and you weren't eating well, and you were catching every cold and bug under the sun, and you can tell when someone is just not coping and not doing well. They are emotionally and physically shattered, because grief does that. It affects your body as well, affects your mind, your ability to concentrate, to work, to do everything. And plus, you've got your two daughters as well to take care of, you know, in everyday life. And so all of a sudden, this person just gets left, not just with the absence of their loved one, but also life to carry on with. And so it just, to me, it never occurred that it would be fair for me to arrive to your house or anywhere and make it about me, because I still got to go home and have a husband and have my ordered life. And as much as it was uncomfortable, because this whole thing really, it pushed against my own theology, my beliefs, my fears, you know, it touches on other griefs. Yeah, it did. It was uncomfortable, but it certainly, you were not in the capacity to be the person for me to come back to. Like, everyone should be supporting you. After all, you know, I used to always say to my husband, she goes to bed at night and lies next to that empty space. I don't. Like, it's not even a question of who needed a help. And so I had other people that could support me. So I don't know. It's just, it just feels like common sense, just a natural thing. I can't even explain, because to me it just is. It's just the truth of what I could see.
Has your understanding of grief changed since Jason died and the experiences that you had with me as a friend walking through my journey of grief?
It has. It has made more real, and it has made me realize that life is uncertain, you know, and we are not in control of things as much as we think we are. And yeah, if for nothing else, it's just made things less black and white and more grace.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm okay with that. Mm.
And so what... you mentioned to me that you've learned some things about grief of, I don't know, about how you thought people got better. from yes. grief. Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah. And I think this was just probably where I made my mistakes with you as well. And I mean, in the time, you know, watching other people make mistakes with you, because I could see, you know, I witnessed a few conversations that were very hard, very cringy.
Very cringy.
Very cringy. I think for me, I noticed that the discomfort that grief creates in us, you know, well, for me, for example, for me, watching you, such a close friend, so bubbly and friendly and just this Tatiana that I knew, all of a sudden she is sad and angry.
So angry.
So angry. And she is taking no crap from anyone. And there was a side of me that felt uncomfortable. And I just was like, you know, you need to be liked right now, and you need to be calm, and you need to think positive. So even I, with my understanding of you and, you know, as a counselor, I still fell in that same trap of just trying to cheer you up and kind of like look for, you know, give advice. I think that was one of the ones I did that was pretty bad, you know, kind of come alongside and be like, you know, maybe try and doing this and what about that? And, you know, those things that we do out of our own discomfort. Because I would look at you and I wanted to help, desperately wanted to rescue you. I wanted to like pull you out of this body. I wanted to do something magnificent that if it wasn't to bring Jay back, then I needed to kind of repair something. And that's when we make our mistakes. Because then we start with the silly advices and, you know, and then we start getting frustrated because you are not listening to none of those silly advices.
Oh, was
advices.
I not listening? Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise. She is like, you know, a woman of character, integrity, and she will not buck no matter how much it's hurting. And you're not complying and listening. And so I'm thinking, how can I help this woman? You know, and so this discomfort, that's when you make your mistakes. And then you feel like, oh, I can't help her. She's not listening. And or maybe I'm not a good enough friend. Yeah.
But also there was how everybody else around thought about grief, yeah. right? Because yeah. we think that the way that we think about grief is the way that everybody thinks about grief.
Yeah.
And then a death happens.
Yes.
And then we realize that people grieve differently.
Yeah.
And feelings get very hurt very quickly.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things that I heard a lot. People saying to me, I'm trying to help you, but you're not listening.
Yes. Yeah.
And what was interesting was that we had some circumstances, right, that that because I was not complying, quote unquote, with what the appropriate grief expressions
protocol,
yes, were at the time by, you know, higher powers. People would come to you,
yes,
as if you were my voice of reason.
Mm-hmm.
How was that for you? I'm curious.
It was uncomfortable because I knew they were trying to get me, the best friend that is supposedly thinking straight, which I wasn't 100% because I was also very upset and emotional, but I guess I could pack it all up. So they'll come to me and want me to kind of speak into your life and kind of, you know, can you help us get Tatiana to see that this is going to be okay, or get her to see, you know, whatever.
Or get her to behave.
Get her to behave.
Get her to stop telling people that what they're doing is unhelpful.
Exactly. Okay. Be a good girl. It was uncomfortable because I knew that that they were coming from a good place. But at the same time, it wasn't going to go anywhere because that was not what you needed. And I knew that the minute that I went into your camp and try and convince you, you would just be like, what the hell are you doing, Chris? You know, and it also didn't fit fully with my values because I knew it was a big deal because I knew Jay and because you guys were just too close to us. And I kept thinking, what if that was me? What if it was my Jason that had died? I would be feeling like that as well. I would be, you know, in that messy situation as well. So there was no winning. It was very uncomfortable. I didn't feel happy or proud at all to be put in that position. I didn't feel like it's a position anybody should be in, because obviously I couldn't please those people that were asking me to speak into your life, and I certainly wasn't going to get anywhere with you. Mm. And it actually was made my relationship with you harder.
Yeah. Mm. And I'm just really grateful that our friendship has survived that, because yes. I think that there are a lot of people don't have that resilience in their friendship that yeah. we had.
Yeah.
Because it felt like people were meddling into my business.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people there that are grieving the death of their person feels like that. It's almost like you become public property. And yeah. then all of a sudden, mm-hmm. people have their ideas about grief and how somebody should be grieving and what mm-hmm. they should be doing or shouldn't be doing. And either they say it directly to that person, or they, you know, in our case, try to speak reason to a best friend or somebody that's really close. And in order to tame the yes. person's response to grief, right? So the bereaved all of a sudden also have to also deal with the loss of self-agency.
Absolutely, yes.
And in that, what I think was really difficult for me was that I, all of a sudden, I felt, have I also lost my best friend mm-hmm. as well as losing my husband? And now I can see that that's not the case at all. But this is the beauty of hindsight, which we don't have in the middle of the storm, right?
No, we don't. And I think you and I, in all honesty, we did have a season that our friendship completely changed. And yeah. it felt like, yeah, Jay passed away and the Tatiana that I knew is not the same person, because of course that's how it is. And I didn't know how to be your friend to this new Tatiana, you know, how to be around her. And because of those dynamics that we were just talking about before, I was left feeling like, I can't do this. I can't be a good friend. I can't really support her in a way she needs. All I'm going to do is mess up and annoy her and make things harder. And so it many, many, many times it felt easier to just pull back. You know, to just kind of not be a part
which is
of
really
things.
Interesting for me, because from where I was standing was just like, why is she not calling me? Why is she not showing up? And so I couldn't understand that, because I was so wrapped up in my own pain that all I felt was abandonment.
Yes.
And I know that now that that's not yeah. your intention, but it felt like that at the time.
Yeah. I can imagine, yeah. And for me, well, all I was thinking is, instead of making things worse, it's best to just kind of leave it. You know, and of course, I look at it now and I'm like, no. You know, there are many other ways you could have done this and many different conversations we could have had. But everyone is hurting in that moment, and it just feels like, you know, we don't move the same way, we kind of get a bit, you know, clunky and
So I know that I became, I don't know, Miss Sassy Mouth and whatever is that people said to me, and I'm like, actually no, that's unhelpful, that's actually hurtful. I would call them out on it.
Yeah, you did.
And I remember saying a few things to you that just came out just like with such force. And what was it like for you, you know, like to be in the receiving end of the lashing out? Because the reality is, I wasn't angry at you.
No.
Well, I was angry at everybody, at God, at the universe, at yes. Jason. And, but how was it for you?
I don't think it was like, oh my goodness, how dare she speaks to me like that. No, it wasn't that at all, because I could see as well. It was just so obvious. This was, you lost your husband. Like it, you know, it makes complete sense that you're feeling that way. But it was unusual to see you that angry, you know, and to kind of like be around you when you're feeling like that. Because that's just so, I guess, so different than the Tatiana that I always knew. And so, yeah, I mean, when you're grieving, there's a heaviness and a sadness around that person, but then also the anger. So, yeah, it was definitely difficult seeing you like that. Not because you're hurting me, but because there are times where I would think, is she going to recover? Like, is this how she's always going to be now? You know, and that's just not the person I knew. And it causes that, it leaves you with that fear, that anxiety, that worry, that what if this person never returns to what they used to be before?
Which I think I haven't.
You won't. It's a different Tatiana. It's a new life, new normal, a new woman. And yeah, and of course you see that with time. Mm. But in the moment it was just like, who is this person? And it felt like another loss.
Mm. Mm. It does, right? It's all the losses within the big loss that we don't get to talk about. And I think that there is a lot of people in my life, like the friends that were close to me, that felt extremely offended at me. I have friends that I still love, but I had to ask them not to come around anymore because their ideas and the way that they reacted to my reactions, they were extremely upset at me and really took offense, and they took it personally. And so people telling me a whole lot of things that were actually really hurtful.
Yeah.
And then it was really interesting because it was at a time where it was almost like people felt like they had the right to say whatever they wanted to me. Mm. But the moment that right was on my court, you know, and I'm like, oh, I'm just going to serve the ball that you just put it on my court. Then they got offended and they got upset at me. And then I had to deal with those losses as well. And I'm really grateful. I'm so grateful that we were able to find a way through all of that to start rebuilding our relationship. Because like you said, I wasn't that person that was your best friend anymore. It was almost like that person kind of died with Jason.
I think she did, parts of that. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's just kind of how it is. With time, you get to realize that the way you are with that person, you know, you that person's gone now. And so there's parts of you that has changed and gone as well. And I think I needed to realize that as well. That there's some things about you that's never going to change, and the things we know about each other and who you are at your core. But then there are other things that it just feels like, yeah, that's just not how she is anymore. And that's okay. So yes, there is that rebuild, and there is getting used to that new normal that I often talk about so much, because it is, you know, it's not like, oh, how I used to be before all of this. It's actually how you're going to be after all of this.
And also this whole thing about acceptance, right? So it's really interesting too, because a lot of people would say to me, you know, you have to accept that Jason is gone, and you have to accept that you're the only parent, and you have to accept all those things.
Yeah.
But what was really interesting for me was that people didn't seem to accept this new person that I was becoming because of the grief.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it was almost like, again, another ball of my core. You need to accept, accept, accept.
Yeah. Accept that he's gone. Accept that you have responsibilities, you know. But then when it came time for them to accept that you also had, you were changing, and probably still is.
Yeah.
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 It makes people uncomfortable. And so, yeah.
Okay. So say if you know, were in your practice and you were talking to a person that is trying to support a friend that's grieving the loss of a, life partner. Mm-hmm. And that person is saying, I don't know how to be my friend's friend anymore. I don't know how to support that person. Having gone through what we have been through,
yeah,
what would be some of your guidance to someone like that?
Your presence is enough. Just sit next to that person. Don't need to say anything. That's, you know, that's what I've learned. You didn't need my words. You didn't need me to even say it's going to be okay or it's not or whatever. You just needed me to sit next to you, hold your hand. And then if you cried, I would pass the tissues. And if you didn't, it was okay. And that's what I would say to a client. I'll say, just be present. Your presence is actually enough. Being another human there is actually sufficient. Looking at that person in the eye and just saying, I'm here for you. You know, like this, you don't need some magic formula, a set of words to say to somebody. It's incredible what just holding someone's hand, giving them a hug, looking at them in the eye. You know, there's something about your nervous system being able to calm the other person's nervous system in that moment.
Mm.
And just trusting as well that the friendship and the history that you've had with that person prior is actually enough to for that moment, for this present moment right now. The problem is that, you know, we don't think that's enough oftentimes, mm. and we just try and sort of do more and say more, but it's actually the simple things.
Mm, I agree.
Mm.
I think just withstanding with yeah. people, being present.
Show up. Just arrive. Don't try to get anything perfect. Just do it. Just yeah. arrive. Just pick up the phone and call. I hesitated all the time. That was one thing I remember.
Did you?
Every time I would pick up the phone, I would think, is this the right time? Will I be bothering? Will I be disturbing? Is this dinner time? You know? And if a client was asking me that now, I would say, just send a text, pick up the phone and say, I'm thinking of you. Is this, you know, cool? And if it's not a good time, then that person can tell you it's not a good time. You know, like it's okay to get it wrong, because the more you fixate on being a perfect friend, being a perfect support person, the harder it will be. And the more you'll pull back, or the more, you know, I guess mistakes you'll make or silly things you'll say.
Mm.
So the key is actually in just be yourself. Yeah. Don't overthink it.
Don't overthink it. Yeah. yeah. And I've heard, you know, Sue Blair, our beautiful Sue, saying something before. She said that the golden rule is treat other people how you would like to be treated. But for her, the platinum rule is treat other people the way they would like to be treated.
Yes. Yes. Thank you, Sue. Absolutely. I agree with that. Yeah. Yeah. Which is why in counseling, we know that the client is the expert in their own lives. And, you know, this is why the whole, you know, the whole practice has to be client-centered and where do they want to go with their lives? I mean, what's the point otherwise if it's my ideas? How is that going to be important to them? You know?
Why do you think then there's like so many friends that try to shut people down? Like that it's not okay to grieve in the way that you are grieving or to express that in the way that you're expressing?
I think because it makes them uncomfortable, and that discomfort is something that's been triggered in them, their own grief. Because the times I felt uncomfortable with your grief was because I was actually scared.
Scared of what?
Scared of having to one day grieve like that. Scared of having to go through that one day. Scared of the fact that the world is not fair, that we have no control, and all those big things. You know, it kind of shakes you to your core. It leaves you really unsettled. I thought, what if someone that I love dies? Like if it happened to her, it could happen to me. You know, like that same thing I was saying before. It's just that discomfort is something that has just been triggered in you. I don't know how long it's, you know, is there, has been there for me, very long time. It triggered some other stuff with, you know, my, as a teenager moving to New Zealand and that fear of being alone. It triggered stuff in me and created a discomfort. And every time you would express your grief, it would touch on that. And how do I contain that? Well, the easiest way is to try and contain you.
And that's what a lot of people try to do.
Yeah.
Unsuccessfully.
In your case, very successfully.
Yes.
Because you did not comply.
No, I did not. And it's really interesting, this, what you're saying right now, because I can, oh gosh, so many emotions. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of going back to lots and lots of stories that I can pull and talk about it. But this whole thing of just people being triggered by their own fears, mm-hmm. as seeing somebody that's seemingly out of control. I had people saying behind my back that if it was their husband, they would have done things differently. They would not have, expressed themselves in a way that I did. They would have been stronger and wiser and more dignified, you know? And so I think that we tell those stories to ourselves.
Yes.
Because deep down, we're really afraid that we're going to just lose our shit.
Yes. Yeah.
And be helpless and be so out of control, like what I was. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, yeah, my God, if this happens to me, if I'm the one that loses my husband, I can be just behaving as crazy and out of control as that woman.
The emotions are so raw, especially in those first few months. And with you, you did not filter it. You just allowed it to be. And there's nothing wrong with that. But the people that are around you, yeah, it absolutely triggered something to watch someone. And I mean, I think back to those first few days, just to watch you literally on the floor, just bent in half and just sobbing and just having no physical strength, and me looking at that and going, how is she going to survive this? I remember thinking that on that second or third day, how is this woman going to physically survive this? She's going to die. My mind couldn't comprehend. That triggers such fear. And I remember many nights in those first 6 months going to bed and just being so scared and crying and thinking, what if my husband dies? Like, I can't cope. I can't do this. And I guess it's because we finally just realized that this element of fearless, it really is kind of in our minds a little bit, isn't it? Because I look at Jay and I think it's so unfair that he died. It's so young. There's still so much work. I look around at our country and at young men and what we need in terms of mental health support. And I just keep thinking, you know, did this, even today I was driving here thinking, God, I miss Jay. And he would be so busy today. We would be ending the week just talking about how much counseling work we did, because I've had such a busy week. And, you know, with all this lockdown and COVID-19 and everything we are living through, the uncertainty and the way our high schools are. And I just think, man, it's so unfair. You know, that word just keep popping up constantly. And I think that word is very powerful and it does trigger something in you.
Because death feels unfair.
Incredibly.
And it doesn't matter, I guess. In some ways it does, because it is different how we process the death of a child to the death of, you know, a healthy man like Jason was to the death of a 90-year-old person. You know, it's very different in some ways when somebody dies and they are an elderly person that have lived a full life and have helped their grandchildren. And it's almost like life has gone full circle when they, in some ways, not always, are kind of like ready to, you know, go to the next stage of their existence. And I think even though it's really sad and hard for the people that are left behind, there is a level of acceptance from us, because we feel like, you know, at least they died when they were a lot older.
Yeah.
We don't have that same feeling when it's a person that's really young, a baby, or when it's somebody at their prime like Jason, especially because he was doing so much good for so many people.
Yeah.
And then it's like what my daughter was saying to me, why is it that my friend's dad, who is a terrible dad, who is an abuser and doesn't love his wife and beats up the kids, why didn't God take that dad? Why did he had to take my father?
Yeah.
The unfairness, this illusion of unfairness that we have really plays up and kind of getting us stuck, I think so. In our grief.
Mm-hmm. I think that's definitely something that keeps people stuck.
And so it's, you know, like, I guess, trying to talk about grief with your friends, it should be easy, but it's not.
It's not, no. I don't think talking about grief is easy at all. I see that in my clients every day. They come and, you know, the first thing that they say is that their loved ones are telling them to be strong.
Yeah.
You know, just be strong. Just keep it together. Just keep going. Just keep doing what you're doing before. Keep attending school. Keep working. You know, going to the supermarket, dropping the kids off at school. Just keep the same routines. Keep going. You know, like distract. Seems to be the common advice.
And that's really sad.
It is.
You know what? I remember when Jay died a couple of months later after he passed away. It was the school holidays here in New Zealand.
Mm.
And then my kids went to a youth kids camp for a whole week.
Yeah.
And it was the first time that I was going to be completely by myself.
I remember that. Yeah.
And so I organized to catch up with some people. And I thought, I can do this. It's going to be okay. And then all of a sudden, all the things that I kind of organized didn't happen. People had really legitimate reasons to not show up. But then I was by myself.
Mm.
And I remember, okay, I can do this. I went to the supermarket. I bought myself some food and I thought I'm going to cook a good meal because I loved cooking, right? Yes. And I thought cooking has been a really big part of my life and I'm going to cook a nice meal. I'm not going to eat another frozen lasagna. Oh, friends out there, let me tell you, there is only so much lasagna one can take. Please go beyond the lasagna, okay, in so many ways. Just, yeah, think outside of the box when you are bringing frozen food, but also bring a little extra aroha, a little extra love, a little extra presence with the lasagna. Anyway, didn't want to eat another frozen lasagna. And I cooked this meal, and I bought a bottle of wine, and I thought I'm just going to have a glass of wine with my food. And I remember sitting in front of that meal. It was beautiful steak. And I could not eat. And it was just stuck right here. And in that moment, it was like, I can't eat. I can't call anybody.
Yeah.
This is mine to hold. But I cannot hold this.
Mm.
It's crushing me. There's nobody in the world. I couldn't call you. I couldn't call my sister. There is nobody in the world that you can call that can help you to carry that weight. That weight's yours alone. And so that night, I drank the whole bottle of wine by myself. And I'm not a drinker. Right?
No, you're not.
What do we do? We just drink one glass of Riesling and, you know, I don't know, maybe a strawberry daiquiri, maybe a pina colada. I'm a lolly drinker. And so I drank the whole bottle of wine, and it was the first night that I slept through the night.
Mm.
And then the next day I did the same thing. And the next day, and the next, I did that for 5 nights in a row.
Wow.
And on the last night, when the kids were going to come back the next day, I went to the liquor shop, and I remember I put my hand the key to turn off the ignition. There was a parking right in front of the liquor store in this busy road up here. What are the odds, you know?
How convenient.
How convenient. And I remember putting my hand on the key, and then I just had this voice inside of me.
Mm.
And it said, "What are you doing?"
Yeah.
And I, in that moment, it was almost like I knew what I was doing. I had to really look into myself and recognize and say it out loud to me. I am trying to numb the pain.
Yes.
Because it's too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how long I was in front of that liquor store with the car still on. But it was that reckoning with myself that I had to decide. I have two choices here. I can either find a way to numb the pain, and it might be through alcohol. I was too poor to become an alcoholic. That's the truth. I had no income when my husband died. Oh, God, I don't even want to go back into that story. But I could find ways to numb it. And I think most addictions come from it. It's too much pain.
Yeah.
And you just don't want to feel the pain anymore.
Yeah.
And so, you know, people medicate, they drink, they work, they start, I don't know what people do.
Sex addictions.
There you go.
Yeah.
And I knew that in that moment, I had a choice to either medicate my pain, but I knew that if that was the path I took, somehow that would catch up to me. And all I would be doing was to be putting stuff all this grief down, and one day it would erupt like a volcano.
Yes.
And I had another choice, which was to face the grief and to embrace it and to feel the pain. Because my husband died, but my love for him didn't die.
Yes.
I still love him.
Mm-hmm.
And if I chose to embrace the grief and to hurt because of him, because he's not here anymore, because I miss him and I crave for his presence, if I chose that, I felt like that was the worst choice I could make, because I felt that the weight of the grief would completely destroy me. So I felt like I was doomed either way.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, I made a decision and I drove away.
Yeah.
And for about 2 years, I didn't drink one drop of alcohol.
Yeah.
But it was not because I have ever struggled with alcohol, but because I knew that when the pain is too much, we become very susceptible to find ways that are unhealthy to cope with it.
Absolutely, we do. Yeah.
And what I think I discovered through that, and I did not know that, at least not cognitively back then, was that by making that choice, that was a watershed moment in my life.
Yeah.
And it really was then that I kind of went, I don't know how to grieve. But ain't nobody gonna tell me.
Yeah,
I'm gonna figure that out on my own. And then I scared the shit out of everybody else, including you.
Yes, but at least you didn't opt to go down that path of just self-medicating in some way, you know, with wine in this case. Because yes, people will look for a coping mechanism in that moment, that crushing weight. They will try and find a way. And if there's no support people around, they often, that's the path they'll go. You'll find a way.
We succumb to that.
We do, yeah. And I think that, that decision was, so important, crucial, you know, in your grieving process.
And I think it's really important, too, to then kind of say, okay, I'm making this choice. Who are the people around me that I can actually share that to be accountable?
Yeah.
Who are the people that I have around me that can hold the weight of some of this for me?
Yeah.
Because I felt in that week, and you know, that nobody could hold the weight for me.
Yes.
And that's not true.
Yeah.
I think that sometimes we say to people that are grieving, you know, whatever you need, just let me know. That is the most unhelpful thing people said to me.
It's very vague, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Very vague. But when you would say, I can catch up with you this week at this time.
Yes, yeah.
That was very specific. And even if I said no several times, right?
Yep.
But
you need something concrete and you need some to be able to say, you know, or can I call you tomorrow? You know, it might have been like a text and say, and there are times I texted you and I was like, can I call you now? And you're like, oh, actually, today is not a good day, or, you know, tomorrow or next week. So I think instead of just saying to people, oh, whatever you need, that's far too sort of general and, you know, broad. You need to kind of, because the person that's grieving, they're just, you know, they shouldn't be expected to be thinking about all these details as well of like, oh, I'm not feeling so good and I'm just going to like now figure out who I'm going to call. I've got all these people who have told me that I can call anytime. You know, you're not going to think like that in that moment. You need the support people to do the supporting and to actually reach in and offer the help.
And reach in even when they are feeling uncomfortable.
Yes, and reach in even if, yeah, if you tried one way and it didn't work, then try another way. And just
but keep on trying.
Keep on trying.
Because this is why we're here today, right? Yeah. Like having this conversation and having a meal before that because you kept on trying.
Yeah.
Even when I was not ready to talk, even when I was pushing you away. Like, you know, I think that people give up.
Yeah, you've got to keep trying. You've got to realize this is not about you.
Amen. Can you say that again?
It is not about you. And it was not about me. It was never about me. And it never will be about me. It was not my husband that died. It was yours. This is not about me. So you're allowed to get angry and to be frustrated. And yeah, I didn't always respond in the best of ways. But I think what I am proud of in our friendship is that I was able to go back later and say, hey, I know that I'm not doing my best here. And I know that, you know, sometimes I pull back and just kind of be honest, have these really frank conversations. And I've said to you before, I'm like, I just, you know I'm not showing up in the way that I could or should, but I'm also sometimes don't know how to do this. I'm also a bit lost here in this forest. And so bear with me.
And I think that's okay. I think just saying to, you know, your friend, your family member who is grieving, I want to be here for you. I just don't know how. I don't know what to do. Can you give me a little bit of guidance?
Yeah.
Sometimes they might not be able to. Mm-hmm. So just keep on trying.
Yeah.
And let me just like lift off like some... I don't know, insecurities that people might have in, oh, I don't want to do the wrong thing. I might fail. So I'm just going to reassure you, you are going to do the wrong thing and you are going to fail. So get over it.
Yeah. It's don't take it personal. Don't overthink it. You are going to get it wrong. You will say some pretty dumb things at times.
And then don't pretend when you say dumb things, just go, oh my God, that was really dumb. Yes. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's what we did rather than kind of like, you know it was dumb. The person know it was dumb, but nobody says nothing.
That's you're defending it, which is even worse, trying to defend it.
Yes, yes. Because then nobody wins. Because I think that that's probably one of the reasons that our friendship really survived that really tumultuous time was because there was a lot of, I don't know how to do this from both of us.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of friend I need you to be. You don't know what kind of friend you need me to be. And we're all trying to figure this out. But the humility in saying and being really honest and say, I don't know how, and this is not about me, but I don't know how to be here for you.
Yeah. And just, I remember some conversations as well, just saying to you, like, I'm going to just say this to you, Tachi, but you know, if it sounds like advice, then just tell me, you know, tell me to shut up. I think I used to say a lot to you, like, just tell me to stop or tell me to shut up if it's not, if it's starting to kind of hurt, if it's starting to feel like, you know, you're thinking about yourself now and not me. So just tell me to stop. And yeah, I just remember us having those conversations and me going, I'm not trying to give you advice, but you know, have you thought of this or whatever? And you know, like I'm saying, it's not smooth. There's those moments where it just feels robotic almost, you know,
but very bumpy.
Very, very bumpy.
Because I think one of the things that people don't realize is that people who are grieving can become really volatile.
Yes, absolutely.
And they get triggered a lot. Mm-hmm. And you know what is being triggered? You do not have the capacity to I don't know. I don't like to say the word control yourself, but a song will come on the radio, a smell, a memory, whatever it is.
Yep.
You get triggered. God knows how you're going to respond.
Yeah.
And if the people around you are feeling all sore and all offended by the way you're responding, then all of a sudden you're left trying to, you know, hold the rubbles of your life without anybody to be there in the mess with you.
Yes.
And often people would say, you know, I didn't know what to do, so I did nothing. I didn't know what to say, so I say nothing. And that's not helpful either.
No.
But it is, it's a situation where nobody wins if we are not open and honest and admit our own fragility to the person that's grieving and admit that we do not have the answers. People were so quick to give me answers that I was not asking questions for.
Exactly. The solutions, the answers just kept coming, kept rolling in, but they didn't fit.
And it's exhausting. It's so exhausting to have to babysit other people's emotions when you are just like up Schitt's Creek.
Pretty much. Yeah.
So I think that, oh my God, I want to keep on talking, but I just feel like we've talked for a really long time.
Yes.
So, okay. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions before, three questions actually, so that we can close.
Sure.
For you as a person who was also grieving, what are some of the things that you personally have done to help maintain or elevate your well-being while you were in the messiness of, you know, you lost your friend, but also you need to be a support person to another friend that's hurting. You need to find ways to maintain your own sanity. Did you end up developing certain well-being practices, or did you have already certain well-being practices that you felt were really crucial for yourself, for your own holding yourself?
I think for me, I've never been the most sort of artistically inclined person, you know, in terms of like drawing or coloring or anything like that. But one thing that I started was mind mapping. And so it just made sense to me because that's just how I am. I couldn't imagine myself sort of sitting there and painting something. But I was able to sit with a big sheet of paper, you know, an A3 or whatever, and just kind of sit there with a vivid and just really, you know, just put that emotion, that thought, that feeling in a circle in the middle of the paper and then just be able to kind of, you know, unpack that, expand that. What is coming out of my mind? What am I feeling? What am I thinking about this? What do I know about this? How is it triggering me? And I just remember I would just sit on the floor, you know, and my darling husband sometimes would take the kids out and so I could have the house to myself, and I would just sit on the floor and just have that big piece of paper. And I do that quite often, and that started back then, and I still do it now. And just mapping my thoughts, and it just felt like all that stuff that was inside of me and was overwhelming me was able to be externalized. Mm. And all of a sudden they didn't have the same power anymore. Mm. You know, so if you're not into drawing, it's okay. You just need a piece of paper and a vivid or pen, anything. So that really helped. Walking, going for walks was incredibly helpful as well. I think the practice of mindfulness has been really great for me. It's something that I kind of always used on and off, but I think during that time was really important, just kind of being in the moment, being present, being really appreciative of where I was at, and also just when the thoughts and feelings, that overwhelming feeling would come, you know, there was no judgment there. I wasn't trying to judge it and understand it and figure it out every second of the day. I was able to just kind of let it be.
Because I think it's really important for someone who is a support person, of a person that's bereaved, to find ways to really hold themselves, because the toll can be really tough.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for me, like I said, talking about Jay was really important. Not to you, obviously, not coming to talk to you about him, because you already knew him so well, but other people, with my kids, with my husband, with, you know, new friends, people that didn't know him at all. It just felt like it still feels so healthy, so honoring to be able to share stories and to remember. And it just, you know, it mends your heart and it sort of strengthens you again.
But we did talk a lot about Jay, right? So we talked a lot. And that was one of the things that I felt like this amazing relief, because never at any point with you, I had this weird feeling that I couldn't talk about Jason or that you couldn't talk about Jason because you're going to make me upset. You know, that we didn't have that. And I think a lot of people pretended that, I don't know, that Jason didn't exist. So they would come to me and talk about anything under the sun, but not mention the name, because they felt like they would upset me if they did.
Yeah.
And I'm like, honey, I live in a constant state of upset. Like, talking to me about him is not going to make me upset. It might bring tears, but that does not mean that you're not all that. You're not the queen of upsetting me. Like, you know, I'm already in that state.
You're already thinking about him 24/7.
Yeah. And so I think also, as a support person, making room for your grieving person to be able to talk about their person that died is really important, because so many people also said to me, you know, Jason would want you to be happy. In other words, shut up. Let's not talk about him, because otherwise you're going to cry and I'm not going to know how to deal with you.
Exactly.
But I never had that with you. So there were times when we talked and we laughed about what Jay did, or memories that we had together. And then there were times when we talked and I cried a lot and you also cried, and that was okay. And it is okay to be messy. But I think allowing the person that's grieving to take the lead on that.
Yes, absolutely. That's key. Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. It has to be led by them, because otherwise you will quickly make it all about yourself, you know. And so do have those conversations and just, you know, let that person that has passed away still be a part of your world, because the reason you're grieving is because you love them so much, you know. It's just because they are not here now doesn't mean that you just try and shut that person away and not think or talk about them. All you are doing is making that grief even more complex and painful and hurting you. That's not natural, healthy at all.
And I really like what you said about how, you know, you're grieving as well. So just honoring that by going to other people, find your own support and become, you know, I think a lot of people don't know what to do. Of course, we talked about this, but then find resources, you know, talk to somebody, ask advice. You can ask advice, not give advice to the person that's bereaved, but educate yourself in how you can support your friend, but be really clear in what is it that you can support. Because the last thing that a person that is grieving needs is also excuses, I think. Because let's be honest, we all have a lot going on in our lives.
Yep.
So you cannot just stop your life to be supporting somebody that's grieving. You still have your own family. You had your kids and you were studying and you had to, you know, find a new job. And there's all this stuff going on with your health as well. But if you would call me and go, I'm so sorry, I didn't call you because I'm struggling and da 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 da, then it becomes about you, right? So the call then it's really important for you to choose the moments when you have some type of energy to really be present with the person that's grieving. Because let's be honest, that person is caring so much that they will probably suck you dry. So you need to come into that conversation, come into that, you know, meeting at the coffee shop in a time when you yourself are okay and ready to be of service.
Yes, exactly. Don't say yes to a coffee or to whatever, or even a phone call, if you are already exhausted and you're going to resent it later. It's best to say, I'm not well, or, you know, I'm busy right now, not available, whatever it is, and do it later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because otherwise that's the thing, that is another thing that the grieving person doesn't need, friends that now are resenting them.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Or that, yeah, that are just, or also that is in the conversation looking tired or acting frustrated or whatever. So, you know, you need to show up able to give that time and energy. Otherwise just don't, because
okay, so now two questions, and you can take this whichever way you want. Okay. If you had one day to live and that was your very last day on this earth, what would you choose to do with this 24 hours? Who would you see? What would you say to them? What would you do? Hit me with your best shot.
Wow, that is a big question. I would definitely spend time with my two beautiful kids and my husband. I would kiss them so much and just try and just have their smell and their little faces just, you know, in my mind. And they're still quite young, so they, you know, I still do that a lot. Just to tell them that I love them and that they are so perfect in their own way, and try and impart with them a little bit of what it, you know, how important they are to me, and that it's okay for them to just be themselves for the rest of their lives. I will be proud. Mm. Even though I'm leaving in that 24 hours, Mom will forever be proud. There will be so many people I want to see. I would definitely be knocking on your door.
Well, I should be knocking on your door because you're the one dying.
Oh, that's right. I'm the one dying. Come to my house. There's just a few key people that I would want to hug and see. And the sad thing is that there's some people overseas that I probably wouldn't be able to make it to go and see them, especially back in Brazil. Mm. But I'm just thinking, if it's 24 hours and it's New Zealand, man, you're on that top list of people that I'm going to get to see and have that wine and just hug and kiss.
I am dying, but I'm having that glass of wine.
Glass of wine before I go. I am kissing and cuddling you and just loving, absolutely loving that moment and just being with those people. And yeah, it's not even about what I have to tell them. Mm. It's being. That's what I'm learning as I get a little bit wiser in this life of mine. I don't even have to give anyone some great big speech. I just want to like hold them and be held by them.
That's awesome. Mm. I'll come and hold you.
Yes.
Okay. So now last question. Mm-hmm. If you had 1 year to live, mm-hmm. and this would be your very last year, what would be the legacy that you would want to leave behind?
I love all things mental health. I have a passion for people being well, you know, for people to realize that mental health is just as important as physical health. Mm. And I think I would work really hard for people to kind of, in that year that I'd have to live, for people to kind of just understand a little bit more of what it means to live with that and how difficult it is for the people that are struggling, how much they're going through, for people that are grieving for any kind of pain and suffering that any of us humans are going through. It is hard, you know, and just kind of being able to say, what is it that we can do to build a greater level of tolerance and understanding and love among us fellow humans? How can we be a little bit less harsh and judgmental with each other and a little bit more like, I don't know, I don't get it, but I'm going to show up and just be there for you anyway. You know, like that's, yeah. I don't even know if this, that makes any sense, but that's kind of like what I feel in my gut. It's not even necessarily well put cognitively, but it's in my heart. I just feel like is this, it would be this, I would work towards this movement, this change for people to just be a little bit more human with each other. Does that make sense?
It makes complete sense. I feel like a book's coming. There's a book coming. Watch out, people. We are going to be doing another podcast for a book launch sometime
in this year.
But then she's going to be here for a really, really, really long time because we need to grow old and toothless together.
Yes, we do. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And so thank you. I just I feel really, really blessed to have you in my life, to be able to have this conversation with you. And I thought we were going to do a lot more jokes than we actually did. We kind of went really deep, didn't we? And just a little bit serious. That's not how we roll normally.
No, it's not. It absolutely is not. And I think it's just, yeah, it was just the realization of, you know, the things that we've been through that we hadn't stopped to sort of look at it in one go.
Yes. Yeah.
And so just looking back and going, wow, we have gone through a lot in the last 3 years.
Yeah.
Kind of settled the mood a bit, didn't it?
3 years and 3 months.
Yeah.
In 3 days.
Wow. Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love you forever.
Yes, I love you too.
I am so grateful to have you in my life. Mm-hmm. And I'm really grateful for the really hard times that we had after Jason passed away. They felt like shit.
Yeah, they did.
But I think that because of the struggles that we had in our friendship, and some of them were internal, like between you and I, some of them came from pressure from other people.
Yeah.
I actually look back and go, oh my God, going through those things have given me a depth of understanding about myself, what kind of friend I want to be for you.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that I would like for a friendship?
Mm.
And so we're still kind of in this process of renegotiating this new season. But I am so grateful for you in my life.
Me too. I can't imagine life without you. And yeah, I just think of all the moments where I just wanted to pick up the phone and talk about something really trivial and silly. And then I was like, oh no, okay, not yet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but that's kind of coming back.
Yeah.
And you are regaining your energy and strength and ability to kind of just, you know, hold my silliness and
I love
my
your
jokes.
Silliness. What are you talking about? I love it.
Thank you for having me. And yeah, just having this really open and honest conversation and be able to just look back. And then
I think it's important to look back. Sometimes we can get stuck in only looking back and then we can't move forward.
Yeah.
But I think that sometimes in order to move forward, we need to pause and look back for a little bit and then kind of redirect ourselves.
I think so. Yeah.
So thank you for doing that with me tonight.
You are very welcome. Thank you for having me.
So I am going to put your notes, because you do have a private practice.
Yes, I do.
Woohoo! Yes, so I'm going to put your details on the show notes.
Yeah.
So if anybody wants to contact you, you do Zoom sessions online, right? So that people can kind of go and get a little bit of this awesomeness. They will not know what hit them because you are pretty awesome.
Yes.
So I'm going to put that on the show notes. And I do want to acknowledge you, Chris, as my friend, but I also as a person that was really close to Jay and who lost a husband. No, I lost a husband.
You lost a friend.
I want to acknowledge. Yeah, I want to acknowledge your grief losing him. And I want to acknowledge Jason as well, because without him going and dying on me, we would be having a very different conversation tonight, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
We would probably, like, the four of us and the kids here, and I would have, I don't know, a trifle or some crazy new recipe that I would whip up and
playing games, playing those little trivia games.
This would have been a whole different conversation. And I would love, what wouldn't I give to have that? But that's not what I have, but what I had today here with you was very, very precious. And to you, my darling, who have been listening to this conversation, thank you so much for your time and your attention. Well, chances are you found crazy grief because you are grieving the death of your person, or you want to support someone who's grieving. In any case, I am so sorry that our paths have crossed in this way, but I am glad that we found each other. My email is on the show notes. Please reach out. I would love to hear from you. Do subscribe to this podcast and leave us a 5-star rating so we can continue to produce more meaningful conversations about grief. And remember, you are not going crazy. You are just grieving. Take a moment to breathe, reach out to someone you trust, and be kind to yourself. Light and peace.